Cynicism is not an emotional state that resonates for me. So if I don't feel cynical, what do I feel when the world seems scary and too hard? I feel despair. I feel deep, abiding dread about the future and what will be left after the Trumpians and others destroy our planet and our life. Feelings of weakness, of bleakness, and profound fear, but not cynicism. I recall my experience in the sixth grade. Mr. George was called to the office and came back crying. I'd never seen a teacher cry before, much less a man. Mr. George proceeded to tell us that President Kennedy had been shot, and we were all dismissed. Finding my younger brother, we walked the mile home in a bit of a daze. Arriving at an empty house, since both parents were at work, we turned on the big console television and watched Jacqueline Kennedy crawl over the back of the convertible to her husband over and over and over again. I don't remember much else about that day. But sometime shortly after that, I found myself in the school library looking for something to read. I found a book that had a life-changing effect on me. Its title continues to tickle at the edges of my memory, but I believe it was a science fiction book written by a scientist who had figured out a way to save our planet from a future looming destruction. It was compelling and provocative, and it catapulted my saddened, despairing 12-year-old self to have a vision about a real potential future for humankind. Until then, my pleasure readings were fantasies, consisting of the many Wizard of Oz books and the Trixie Belden naughty girl mysteries. I devoured those books, and they provided me with comfort and an escape as my mundane world dissolved and transformed. This futuristic book was different. This book filled me with hope and a belief that we humans actually had the potential to save us from ourselves. So when fear of the destruction of our planet from global warming, the death of bees and collapse of crops, or nuclear winter overtake me, I turn to the scientists who struggle to vision a future. Intelligent life probably exists in another remote corner of a galaxy. I take great comfort in knowing that life in the universe began trillions of years ago after the Big Bang that created the stars, and that all life consists of stardust that was created from the nuclear fission of stars going supernova. We might become the dinosaur-like fossils that some future species will discover and try to understand what happened to us. But I can capture hope for life. Just because I can't see the universal web of energy that I am a part of, I can believe that it will continue in some form. All will not be lost. The universe will continue to expand. Stars will continue to explode, and stardust will continue to form elements. Life will persist.
Maybe you've known someone who's really cynical. The person in your office who thinks that the employers don't care about anything but money, or it's the cranky uncle that says that people are no damn good. The definition of cynicism, in fact, is an inclination to believe that people are motivated purely by self-interest. I chose to have cynicism be the theme of this service today because I see it as a dis-ease of the spirit, a numbness towards life. Now, people may have very good reasons to feel cynical. Someone that's been hurt very badly in a relationship or a survivor of abuse may feel cynical about the possibility of ever being in a healthy relationship. If you've never had anyone love you or treat you well, you may believe that people are truly self-serving. And you would be justified in feeling that way. But it doesn't make it healthy, and it doesn't make it whole. Cynics traffic in absolutes. All politicians are corrupt. All people are self-serving. Now, there's different forms of cynicism. There's the activist form, on a mission to stamp out hope wherever it can be found. But then there's the quiet cynicism, the kind that's kept inside. Cynicism could be a companion to depression, and it's just up the road from pessimism, the feeling that nothing good will ever happen. Most of us are not cynical all of the time, but we can be some of the time. It's a useful escape from the pain of our world, and it's a counterbalance to the feeling of helplessness. It can be a preferred option to despair. Being cynical can feel like a safe place, coolly distant with just a hint of irony. But cynicism is corrosive. It can corrode your heart and soul, harden you, close you off from feeling. You may not feel despair, but you sure won't feel love either. When you are cynical, you are not in relationship, either with yourself or with anyone else. Cynicism can be a warning sign of a spirit in need of resuscitation, a spirit in need of reconnection. And so today we will hear some poems that offer antidotes to cynicism. I hope there is something in these words for all of you here today, whether you are actively cynical, considering being cynical, teetering on being cynical, or just struggle with the cynicism in our world. We will share three poems today, and I will offer a short homily on each. You all have an insert in your order of service with each of the poems that we will read today. Each poem will be read once before the homily and once afterwards. I have chosen not to use the poem today, What the Living Do, so we won't be reading it, but I encourage you to read it on your own time. It's a lovely poem. So the second homily is now titled, It Must Be There. Let us begin.
This poem by Billy Collins is entitled Aimless Love. This morning, as I walked along the lake shore, I fell in love with a wren, and later in the day with a mouse the cat had dropped under the dining room table. In the shadows of an autumn evening, I fell for a seamstress still at her machine in the tailor's window, and later for a bowl of broth, steam rising like smoke from a naval battle. This is the best kind of love, I thought, without recompense, without gifts or unkind words, without suspicion or silence on the telephone. The love of the chestnut, the jazz cap, and one hand on the wheel. No lust, no slam of the door, the love of the miniature orange tree, the clean white shirt, the hot evening shower, the highway that cuts across Florida. No waiting, no huffiness or rancor, just a twinge every now and then. For the wren who had built her nest on a low branch overhanging the water, and for the dead mouse still dressed in its light brown suit. But my heart is always propped up in a field on its tripod, ready for the next arrow. After I carried the mouse by the tail to a pile of leaves in the woods, I found myself standing at the bathroom sink, gazing down affectionately at the soap. So patient and soluble, so at home in its pale green soap dish. I could feel myself falling again as I felt its turning in my wet hands and caught the scent of lavender and stone.
Well, that's a silly poem. Makes me smile. I think the theme of that poem is tenderness. Tenderness. Letting yourself soften and open to appreciate something. Opening to the possibility of goodness, even if it's just a bar of soap. But amid the silliness and the falling in love with the dead mouse, there's an important point to this poem. He makes it right in the center when he talks about that these are not really relationships that he has. There's no recompense, no suspicion, or my favorite, no silence on the telephone, no lust or slam of the door. This is the perfect way to re-entry into connection with the world. Tender, tender feelings for something that doesn't even know that you have those feelings. So they can be private and safe. They can be held in your heart. This approach works also for despair and for depression. I remember a time in my 20s, I was experiencing a severe depression, and I saw a beautiful cloud formation, and I fell in love with it. And with that was the possibility for my opening to other feelings. What's really refreshing to me about Billy Collins, the poet here, is that he is the polar opposite of cynicism. He's out there with his heart propped up in a field on a tripod, waiting for the next arrow. It doesn't get more uncynical than that. You can't go from cynical to heart propped up on a tripod. But he's leading us somewhere important with baby steps. Small openings when we feel cut off and in despair, small openings of connection and tenderness, simple appreciation and gratitude. This is the practice of opening our hearts, even if it's only to a bar of soap.
This poem is named To Softness by Laurie Sheck. Under junk heaps, and stripped and burning cars and bombed out buildings under iron and tin and plastic, under U.S. Steel and Coca-Cola, and the bridge repainted silver to cover all the black graffitied hearts and birds and names beneath underpass and overpass, under timetables, profitability, summits, margins of error and cuts, under for your own good and in our best interest, under front runner, leveraged buyouts, arms deals, state of the union, and rates of exchange. It must be there, like an ash heap, but alive. Like a veil, a half-formed thought throbbing its slow pulse behind the lips, a softness, a tenderness, a hand turning pages throughout the night in a bare room, eyes at the window, breath at the door, something in need of protection. Something capable of feeling harm.
I believe that one of the ways that we cope with the complexities and suffering in our world is to build up layers of protection over our spirits. We do this in order to survive. We must do this. But if the layers get too deep, then the good stuff can't get in. Cynicism is the result of building up of those layers and maintaining those layers. This poem has many layers. I start getting cynical around the fifth stanza of that poem. It's a big pile-on. Timetables, margin of error, leverage buyouts. Just like what it takes to live every day sometime in this world as it piles on. But underneath, the poet says, it must be there like an ash heap, but alive. What is it that must be there? The poet says it's a softness, a tenderness, a breath at the door, something in need of protection. What it is, in my mind, is what is covered up by our cynicism, by our layers of protection. Underneath the layers is our aliveness. It's that still, small voice within. The poet appreciates that it's a very vulnerable aliveness, something capable of feeling harm. Cynicism can be a protection of that very vulnerable self. When we are hurt or overwhelmed, it's much easier not to care. The words ash heap are so well chosen. The aliveness under the ash heap of all the hurts, all the failures, all the pain in our lives. And yet, it must be there. But the poet also knows that in there, in that ash heap, in those layers piled up, is fear. Fear of caring, fear of being hurt, fear that things will turn out badly. And the worst kind of fear of all, of really wanting something, but being afraid to want it because you won't get it. This is that still small voice underneath the slag heap of what the world has piled on. And cynicism is one way to protect it. An antidote to cynicism is honoring our own needs and our own fears. Taking this risk to be in relationship with ourselves, with our life. Loving that still small voice of aliveness. Opening to softness.
This is a poem by Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi, whom we know as Rumi popularly, translated by Coleman Barks. Say yes quickly. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. You think you know what time it is? It's time to pray. You've carved so many little figurines. Too many. Don't knock on any random door like a beggar. Reach your long hands out to another door, beyond where you go on the street where everyone says, how are you? And no one says, how aren't you? Tomorrow you'll see what you've broken and torn tonight, thrashing in the dark. Inside you, there's an artist you don't know about. He's not interested in how things look different in moonlight. If you are here faithfully with unfaithfully with us, you're causing terrible damage. If you've opened your loving to God's love, you're helping people you don't know and have never seen. Is what I say true? Say yes quickly if you know, if you've known it from before the beginning of the universe.
So the first two poems we heard this morning were from contemporary poets. This last poem is from Rumi, a Sufi poet who lived in the 13th century. And I thought that if I was his marketing director in the 21st century, I would suggest that his tagline be, kicking ass since the 13th century. Because the point of his poem is to wake us up. What are all these little figurines he's talking about that we're carving? Little idols. It's something that we worship or give our power over to. In cynical times, in our cynical times, we give ourselves over to the little figurines of, nothing I can do will make a difference. Or we worship at the feet of, that's someone else's problem. Or my personal favorite, people are no damn good. You've carved so many little figurines, he says. Try something new. Reach out to another door. A door where the questions are different, where everything doesn't reinforce what you already think. Reach out to that door where someone says, how aren't you? If you're stuck in a cynical place or even a place of despair, how you aren't is alive. How you aren't is engaged. How you aren't is present. I see these three poems that I've shared with you this morning as a progression. Billy Collins' antidote to cynicism is sharing, caring about something that won't make any demands on you. The baby step, the opening of tenderness. In the Sheck poem, we think about cherishing those tender parts of ourselves, loving and protecting that still small voice within. But Rumi's challenging us to take our show on the road, to engage in the world. He says, if you're living unfaithfully with us, you are causing terrible damage. Ouch! What does he mean by this idea of living unfaithfully? Let's flip it around to what is living faithfully. Step one, I think, would be not retreating into cynicism. Not actively or passively squelching hope or the possibility when it comes your way. Step two would be finding that path to connection. Opening up your own heart, connecting with your own aliveness, and finding ways to take that who you are on the road to offer yourself to the world. Rumi uses the word God in his descriptions of who you call out to and how to be with the world. I'm going to replace that word for me with wholeness, or with the idea of radical interdependence, something that I talked to you about earlier this year, living in the awareness that we are connected to all life. Now, you don't have to put your heart on a tripod like Billy Collins does. But to live faithfully in this world, you do have to be engaged. This is what you owe to the world. I had a conversation with Christine Bailey, one of our members, a couple of days ago. We were talking about our fear and despair that humans may not really get our act together to save ourselves. But we both came away from that conversation with the feeling that that may well be true, but I'm not just going to roll over and let it happen. I'm going to offer the best of what I have in this time. I'm going to find ways to engage and make a difference so that I know that I've done what I could. Rumi says, if you open yourself up to radical interconnectedness, you are helping people you don't know and you have never seen. He wants us to say yes quickly to this comment before we can talk ourselves out of it, before we can rationalize it, or before our doubts and our cynicism creep back in. But I challenge you today, on this morning, to say yes quickly. If you've known it, from before the beginning of the universe. Blessed be. Will you pray with me? Holy Spirit of life and love, in these challenging times, help us to stay connected. Give us the strength to reach down through the layers of protection to that still small voice within. Help us to know that love is stronger than fear. Give us the courage to step out of our comfort zones and know that we are not alone, but connected to all life and to all those who long for wholeness and compassion. Give us the power to be tender and loving to ourselves and to others. In the spirit of love and in the presence of this beloved community, we say amen and blessed be.